Welcome to the Subject Composition and Light Photography Podcast. Show notes, links, and contact details can be found at robnunphoto.com. That's www.robnunphoto.com. SCL is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network, and loads of other great tech podcasts can be found over at www.techpodcast.com. Now on with the show. Welcome to SCL, the Subject Composition and Light Photography Podcast. My name's Rob, from robnunphoto.com, and this is my little audio diary of my journey through the wonderful world of photography. Well, it's episode 190 on the 6th of May 2012 on a very dreary Sunday here in Gosport on the south coast of the UK. It seems like it's been raining, I don't know, for about the last month, so I haven't had much chance to go out this week shooting with my big cameras. I have done a little bit of photography with my mobile phone, but just the odd shot around the house and when I've sort of been out and about, but not much at all. However, what I thought I would do this week is a continuation from last week's podcast, which was about essential photo accessories, you know, the things that really we only need. I thought I'd have a bit of fun this week and talk about the non-essential stuff, the extras, the goodies that you can get as well. But before that, a quick word from our sponsor, GoToMeeting. GoToMeeting offer an online, I guess you'd call it a teleconferencing service, because being able to attach a face to a name is important. It enhances our relationships and the way we do business. Unfortunately, meeting all your clients and colleagues in person can be impossible. That's why I recommend GoToMeeting with HD Faces. It lets you meet face-to-face from anywhere in the world, even on the go from an iPad. With GoToMeeting by Citrix, it just takes a webcam and a click to collaborate in group high-definition video. You can see your attendees eye to eye while collaborating on documents in real time. You'll feel instantly connected even if you're thousands of miles apart. Plus, GoToMeeting is so easy to use. iPad users just download the free GoToMeeting app to join. We used GoToMeeting before they became a sponsor, and it really is cool to be able to listen and talk to other people over the internet, but actually see their desktop, but see them in person as well. You can start hosting your own face-to-face online meetings today with GoToMeeting, and my listeners can try it free for 30 days. Don't wait. Take up this special offer. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and use the promo code PODCAST. So visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and use the promo code PODCAST. Thanks to GoToMeeting for sponsoring the SCL Photo Podcast. Now, non-essentials, right? Obviously, there's a whole world of things that we can look at and talk about today. But wouldn't you guess it? I've been fine all week at work. Get a day off. I was sitting in the chair this morning, got up, and I seem to have put my back out again. So it's going to be quite a short podcast. Plus, I'm making dinner today, so I've been going around and preparing that. So let's get started. So maybe this should have been an essential last week, but a printer. But a printer that can print photo quality prints. My favourite is something like this Canon Selfie series of printers, which are a dye sublimation printer, where it doesn't spray the colours on. It kind of has this cartridge you put into this little printer that's got the profile of a tissue box. And you get 6x4s out of it that are pretty much lab quality and are reputed to be able to last about 100 years. The prints work out at about 25p each, so it's not the cheapest way of doing it, but it's instant and you don't have to worry about the nozzle blocking up. or the ink going dry or anything like that. As long as you keep the everything dust free. They don't like dust very much. You get dust on the paper as it goes through, you get speckles on the print, but that won't jam it up. But I've seen Canon selfie printers that are really old that are still going strong. You know, but if you've got a photo printer that's more than a couple of years old, the chances of it still being able to print out photo quality prints are pretty low. So something like that, so produce hard copies of your photos, or a bigger one, obviously if you can afford it, and change the inks a lot and go for the nice photo paper. But that can be very good. And the thing that kind of goes hand in hand with a printer is a nice scanner as well, especially for us film shooters, something like the Epson V500, V700 range of scanners, or even one of those little dinky dedicated ones for 35mm film or slides. I've never played around with the smaller ones, but they seem to be quite cheap, don't they? And I guess, depending on what you're doing, they're probably okay as well, because the ability to scan your own negatives means that you can develop your own black and white film and scan it and print it yourself. If you can do everything at home rather than have to rely on a lab as well, and that makes everything that little bit cheaper. One of the things I particularly enjoy on the computer with my photos is having a big monitor. So invest in a bigger monitor. Or, here's a really cool thing, if you haven't tried it already, just get a HDMI lead, if your laptop or your desktop PC have got an output, to connect it to your TV. Because you'll be amazed. Basically, high-definition TVs are really just big monitors. And, you know, in the old days of CRTs, you'd get close and they would get blurry, wouldn't they? And it'd give you a headache if you tried to use one as a monitor. But I was looking at Oliver's big telly the other day, and it was amazing when we were using it as a big monitor. Something associated with monitors, a colour calibrator or profiler, something I haven't used, and I'm kind of a little bit sceptical about how useful they are. But if you're doing a lot of printing, say, and you want to match your monitor to your printer, so when you look at the screen, that gives you a really good idea of what the colours and what the brightness of a picture will be when it pops out of the printer. If you have a calibrator, they're basically like a device that sticks, you put it on the monitor and it looks at it, and it can adjust the monitor to give you truer output, especially of colours. And the more fancy ones will then look at your printer output as well and match the two. I'm not really sure whether it's worth calibrating your monitor in terms of just the colours on the screen if you're just a DIYer and you're sharing stuff on the web, because it's okay having your monitor calibrated, but who else's monitors are calibrated anywhere else in the world? They're probably not, are they? But if I've seen a professional situation where you've got to deliver colour-adjusted shots, then a calibrator is definitely a must. A little accessory for your camera or your flash, Gorilla Pods. They're fantastic. I've got three of them. I've got the big one, the medium one, and the tiny little one. At the moment, they tend to be stuck onto the bottom of my wireless flashes. But they're these small tripods with these bendy legs that you can get into all sorts of situations, and you can wrap the legs around posts and pillars and brackets and hang flashes off, and they work very, very well indeed. And they're not very expensive if you go for the plain plastic ones. The metal ones are serious cash, but hey, the plastic ones work just as well. And that leads us nicely into the idea of an external flash. As long as your camera's got a hot shoe on it, you can put, or a cold shoe, some sort of shoe, you can have a flash on. And the idea is that the problem with the on-camera flash that we have, the one that pops up or is built into the side of your camera, is the photos it produces can be a little bit flat. It gets rid of shadow, and you can have red eye. But if by putting a bigger flash on an SLR, it's a lot further up. But you can also then bounce it, you can turn the heads, bounce the light off ceilings and walls. Or if you get yourself an off-camera wireless flash system, or a wired one, I know I've talked about them a little bit in the past and I've got one myself, you can get the flashes a long way away from the camera, so you can introduce really dramatic lighting. And again, once you get into that, one of the other things you'll probably want to pick up is a reflector or a diffuser kit. I've got, what's my one? I can't remember what it is, but I think it's a 30-inch one. They collapse down, and it's a reflector, like a gold reflector, a silver reflector, a white reflector, and a diffuser as well, all in one, and you kind of undo these zips and different colours are available that way, but you can use that to bounce light around, not necessarily just with a flash. You can use it for other things as well. Going back to some camera accessories, ones that are very useful and fun to play with are the Kokin filters. Do a quick Google search for Kokin and you'll see the Kokin system is like a three-part system where you have a thread adapter that is specific to your particular lens. So say with Canon that might be like 58mm. And that thread adapter screws into the front of your lens. Then you have a filter holder which slots onto that adapter. And then your filters themselves, which can be square or round, then slide into that holder. So they're very good if you fancy having a go with graduated filters, you know, like a clear square filter with a gradual darkening towards the top. And you can use those for situations where the sky is very bright, but you want to balance the exposure with the ground, and that gradual filter you can slide up and down in the Kokin holder. I think Lee do them as well. And you slide them up and down in the holder to get the sky dark so you can pick out details saying clouds and things. I mean, and you don't even have to use a holder. You can just hold them in front of your camera as long as, you know, you say you've got a steady hand and you don't get your thumbs in the picture. But they do grads of all sorts of colours. You get greys, you get tobaccos, you get reds, you get all sorts of colours. So you can introduce false colour effects for fantastic looking sunsets, for example, and dramatic skies without having to bother with Photoshop. But they also do star filters, polarizing filters, plain coloured filters. So if you're shooting film, you can stick a red filter on, and then that will give you dramatic skies. If the sky's blue, yellow, tone it down a little bit. And the whole world of filtration that in the world of film was a massive industry, you know, because the way to add special effects to your photographs was with filters that you would put on the front of your lens, whereas now we can do most of that in post-processing with digital. But things like star filters, you know, they're really effective. Soft focus filters as well are quite fun to play with, and they can give your photos almost a vintage feel. You know, you put like a diffuser on the front or something like that, and the photos look good. But the other good thing is they're pretty cheap as well on eBay. The only things that tend to be expensive are the polarizers, because polarizing filters is the one filter that you can't really recreate in Photoshop, because a polarizer gets rid of glare, and you can't at the moment anyway, it's very difficult to get rid of glare in a photograph to because it's a combination of increasing the saturation in certain parts of the photo, reducing it in others, and increasing the contrast. So yes, have a look out for them on eBay and get the cheap ones. Speaking of light in the sky and things, a grey card can be a very useful tool, and there's lots of different types of grey cards. The idea of the grey card is that it's a reference for you and your camera, your digital camera, to set a correct white balance, or you could even, you know, use it to set correct exposures as well. So if you carry around a grey card, which is meant to be 18% grey, if you want to take a custom white balance of it, or set your exposure to it, you can just lie it down in the ambient light of the situation, so the light that's hitting, say, your subject, do a custom white balance of it, or take your exposure off it, and that will, if there's a colour cast to the sky because of, I don't know, but it's bright, or say you're working in artificial lights, that will cut that out. And you can get cards, you can get filters that go on the end of your camera that are white or grey, and all sorts of different ways of doing it. You can pop it in your camera bag and it's always there. And it's another situation, you know, another example where if you're in a professional situation where you need to produce colour-corrected images, because, say, you're taking pictures of say, a product, or say it was a dress, say, for example, which you then, or even for something like eBay, which you then wanted to recreate correctly, and you didn't want people, you know, after saying, well, you sold me this dress and it's the wrong colour, you could use it for that as well. coming off of the idea of the grey card, you again got the ideas of light meters. And light meters are quite fascinating things. We have them built into our camera, don't we? Because they're the things that drive the automatic exposure in our cameras. Or if we're in manual mode, they're the things that tell us to make, you know, increase the aperture, decrease it, increase shutter speed, or ISO, and all that sort of stuff. But what's very interesting are flash meters and incident light meters as well, because the light meter in our camera is a reflective light meter. So, say you're taking a picture of a tree, the light's coming down from the sun, hitting the tree, hitting your camera, and your camera goes, I think in order to get a correct exposure, we need to have 18% grey in this picture. And that's roughly how it works. With modern systems, they can be a lot more, how can I put it, a lot more advanced with things like that. Right, I'm just getting a WhatsApp through on my phone. I've just got to check it. What's this? Oh dear, yeah. Suzanne's just WhatsApping me while I'm doing my... I can't say this, Suzanne. Not over the air. Hope we would get banned. That is terrible. Dear me. So, what that means is, because your camera's looking at the light that's being reflected off your subject, it can fool the camera. So, it's the old example of, imagine a white cat walking across some snow. Or snow, for example. Your camera looks at snow and it goes, ooh, this looks a bit bright, and tones the exposure. It will darken everything down because it thinks the scene's too bright. But then when you look at your photographs of the snow's grey. But we know snow's not grey, snow's white. So what you should have done was used exposure compensation and knocked it up a couple of steps. Imagine that with people. You know, if your camera makes that mistake, you get people's complexions look a bit odd, colours go out of sync. Now, if you're using an incident light meter, what you do is you actually take the light meter and you take it up to your subjects, and they normally have a little dome on them, and as the light's shining down on the light meter, you're measuring that. So you're actually measuring the light that's coming onto the subject, not the light's being reflected. And so that means it will always be the same. It will always give you a good exposure. So you look at that and it says, okay, ISO 200, I'll be shooting at f8 at 250th of a second. And you put that in your camera and then you click away. And so it doesn't matter if you had a black cat there, or a white cat, that setting will always be the same. Because it's measuring the light falling on the subject, not the light reflecting on the subject. So it doesn't matter about the reflectivity, if that's a word, of your subject. Cheap incident light meters, which are ones that aren't flash ones or aren't digital, go for, you know, okay money on eBay. But the more expensive ones, the digital ones, are the ones that can do flash metering, and tend to be a bit more expensive. But you can do a little bit more research yourself. Another really cool thing that you can invest in as a non-essential is home lighting kits. You know, you go to Jessop's and look up, not Jessop's, go to eBay and look up home lighting kit, and you can get, for a couple of £100, or even £100, you can get these kits with maybe two or three flash heads, reflectors, diffusers, the little wireless transmitter for the top of your camera, and a background as well, and you can have some... You have some great fun with those, as long as you've got the space to set them up. Now, one thing I haven't talked about is glass, and if you've got an SLR, whether it be film or digital, mucking around with different lenses can be a whole sort of a whole money pit in itself. But things like your first extra lens, apart from things like your 18-55, which is your general purpose walk around lens, and something like a 55 to 250, which is your general purpose telephoto, you've got then things like your 50mm f1.8 or f1.4. Great lenses for low light situations and portrait photography, because they've got massive apertures. You know, f1.8 literally you can be, or f1.4, you can be inside in most situations in the daylight inside where you don't need to use a flash, and you get that fantastic tiny depth of field where you can just have somebody's eyes in focus and nothing else. You'd even go for the 85mm, that's a particular favourite of portrait and fashion photographers. A very flattering photo focal length 85mm. If you're into it, you might want to go macro, get a specific macro lens, like a 60mm or 100mm macro lens. Or you might want to go super telephoto and go for something like 400 or, say, 600mm lenses. And of course, the ultimate photographer's accessory is the photo vest, you know, the thing to carry all this extra kit around with. So there we go, there's a few of my non-essential accessories. If you can think of ideas for your own, go over to rubnumphoto.com, find the show notes for episode 190 and add them on, and we can have a little bit of a laugh. Now, we're into May, we're well into May, aren't we, and I haven't put a new assignment up on the Flickr Photo Group, so if you've got any ideas, please put them into the thread over there. Thanks for everybody who's added photos to the recession group, and I'll have to do a review of them pretty soon as well. Thanks everybody for taking part in the Flickr group and posting comments over on rubnumphoto.com. Thanks to Everyday Jones, who do the intro and outro music for the podcast, but most of all, thanks to you for downloading the podcast, and hopefully pretty soon I'll see you on Flickr.